Okay, so as I said this morning, I'm not no expert in digital humanities. In fact, I never worked with digital humanities. I'm a computational linguist. I don't work much on natural language analysis. I work on generation. So I did my best. I sort of looked at recent work on how NLP was used. And mostly I focus on the big picture, so how natural language processing techniques can be used in different ways to visualize the content of corpora, so collections of documents. So this is what I will be talking about, three ways of processing or visualizing a text collection. And I think actually from what I heard this morning, it's addressing some points we discussed this morning. So I will look at three ways. Document-based visualization, where the idea is you build from the collection of text, from a set of text, you will build a graph. And the graph, the node of the graphs represent documents, not locations, or not entities. They really represent documents. And the edges in the graph tells you how similar the documents are to each other. And the idea is you will, from this graph, you can see, you know, where you have a dense part of the graph means documents that are talking about the same thing, more or less. And this has been proposed in a paper that was presented a few years ago and shown to presented in a workshop for historians. And basically, the aim was to provide a tool to explore, not so much to visualize the product of a research, but more like to explore the document, the set of documents, and to identify what were the key topics, what events, and so the key topics and the entities that were associated with those key topics. So that's one way to do it. I will go into more detail afterwards, right? And the other thing I tried to do in the presentation is also try to link those different ways of visualizing things with different techniques and problems that occur for the natural language processing part. So the second way is a location-based visualization. So that was more or less those maps, where the dots in the maps are locations. And usually, I mean, I didn't find much information. I won't be saying very much about this because I didn't find much documentation for this in NLP. But from Catherine's paper, I saw that the locations can be associated with some information. So in the lynching case, it was like you had a lynching event and a name of a specific person. And so here you have more geographical-based representation of events. And finally, the third type is event-based visualization. It's based on a recent paper that was presented at a workshop developed by people in Germany. And they propose an environment on which which allows for interactive exploration, again, of the data. And here the corpus is represented as a graph again, but the nodes are not, instead of being documents, they are really entities, and the relations, the edges are relation between the entities. So they're telling you what relation holds between these entities. And it's what's called, so more generally, this is a social, so the collection of documents is represented by what is called usually a social network, because the entities are it's jet lag hitting. The nodes are entities, and the entities are relation between entities, between people. Okay, so now I will go through each of these. So the document-based visualization, as I said, the goal is to group together similar documents. And the way you characterize and what you do basically to characterize, I mean to determine similarity between documents, is you are going to be extracting what the authors had called historically relevant information. In their case, they choose that this information is basically named entities of different types, three types they looked at, person, location, organization. And I think even though they don't talk about it in the paper, maybe also events in the sense of important verbs. So you basically, each document is going to be represented by the set of entities that occur in that document. And then the document on the technical level is represented by a vector of name entities, and then so it makes it easy to calculate the similarity between two documents. You just do a, what we call a cosine. So the documents are vectors, so you can imagine they are sort of in this space, and then when the cosine distance is very small between two documents, that means the documents are similar. So, and then as I said, the document collection is a graph, and the and what they do in this paper is they construct this graph, and then they integrate it into an information retrieval system that allows you to search a graph, because that's what you want to do. So they were working on the, you have the paper, I didn't put the reference. So they were working on the Castro speech database, which is 1,400 speeches, interviews, articles. So they had a set of articles talking about Castro. And they choose that asset as the name entities of the person, the location, and the organization. So if you do name entity recognition, well, that means that you go through the text and you have these automatic tools that tells you where the name entities occur, so this is a name entity detection problem, and which type they occur, they are. So in this case, they have Brezhnev is a person, Cuba is a place, and Communist Party of Cuba is an organization. And then as I said, they represent the document as vectors of for each of these named entities, so the one means that for this document, Castro occurs. I mean, it's not related to the previous example, it's just an example. And the last column shows that apparently they were also looking at the verbs in the documents, saying that this document contains the occurrence of Castro, Brezhnev, and Batista, and also the occurrence six occurrences of Declare. Okay, so that's what they do, and then they say, yeah, but there's a problem that the same person can be referred to in many different ways. So this is a problem of what we call alias recognition or aliasing. Which is again that you have variants of the, and I think there will be plenty of examples in your corpus where the same person, the name of a person has different variants. So what they do here, I mean, you have many possible ways of handling alias recognition. What they do is they use what's called a string kernel, which basically compares the distance between two strings and allows you to detect strings that are similar. So if you apply this string kernel, then you will find that this variance here, if you can get it on the screen.
The pointer doesn't work on the screen.
Yeah, I think it just reflects on.
Oh, yeah, no, it doesn't work. Okay, so the variance here can be detected as being similar. Yeah, and then they use, so it's more a technical thing, but they use, so the problem might be that one document contains Castro and the other document contain Dr. Castro. Since the document is just represented by the occurrences that occur in that document, if you have one document that contains Castro and the other that contains Dr. Castro, it will not be similar. So basically what they do is they have this name entity similarity, they multiply this similarity matrix with a vector of the document, so that if the document only contains Castro, it will also, the vector of the document will also say, oh, but Castro is similar to Dr. Castro to 0.8 with a score of 0.8. And so it will take into account also those variants to compute the similarity between two documents. Okay, and then I said they integrate the results of their graph into an interactive graphical user interface. So the idea is the graph is integrated in this information retrieval system, where basically you're going to query the system using some query words. So for example, Castro. In this case, it's not very interesting because everything is about Castro, but. See where the query is here.
This one.
So the one is a query. So in this query, the search terms were Conrado Benitez, Santiago, Chile, and Prensa Latina, Havana. And basically, what it returns is all the documents that are strongly associated with those terms. And then it tells you how similar those documents are. And there are, so the different forms, shapes, the star and the circle correspond to, there were different types of documents in the database. Anyways, it's just a way to see that they come from different fields. Okay, so in a bit more detail, so the search allows you to query the document collection about the specific information. And then the and then you can interact with the visualization, so you can click on the document nodes. And so it helps identifying important topics, as in the sense that I said that the dense region of the graph will tell you where are the topics that are recurring in the collection. It also tells you which named entities are associated with a given set of documents. So if you have a topic, it will be associated with the named entities that occur in those documents. It allows you to separate relevant for, I'll give you some example afterwards, relevant from irrelevant documents. So there might be some documents that are not so important for your research question. It can be to use. It can be used to further analyze similar documents. So I'll just give you some example now. So here, this is a query. The query was health, and then the system would return this whole set of nodes. And you see there are two clusters. Right, there's one cluster to the left where all the nodes are connected. Then there's one node that is by itself, and then there's three nodes that are together. And if you look at the text, you understand why. Because what happened is on the left. Those documents are talking about healthcare in Cuba, and the three, whereas the three nodes that are related are basically greetings, so they are wishing each other good health, right? So it's probably a New Year or something, and so those documents don't talk about healthcare at all. Right? So you can see this from the graph because you see that you have two groups of documents. Clustering, so the idea is if you have a group of documents, what they also allow for in their interface is that you can apply clustering to this specific set of documents. So here, the system is telling you, okay, all these documents are similar, but what you can do is you can apply a clustering algorithm to further identify what are the subgroups in this group of documents. And in this case, so if you apply clustering, you get two groups. So it's a non-parametric clustering algorithm, so it means you don't have to say in advance how many groups you want. The algorithm will by itself discover what are the important groups. And so here's example shows that all the documents in red are talking about the Bay of Pigs invasion, but some of them are talking about so there are speeches on the anniversary of the event, or victory speeches, whereas the other ones are mentioning the invasion, but they are not directly related to the event. So again, it's a way to focus on documents with respect to specific, that are related to specific events. So in this application, the tools that I use are name entity recognition that just apply, so it's contemporary English, so they don't have the problem that, you know, the tools that we have now don't work on other version of the same language, or earlier variant of the language. So they use name entity recognition, they use a Stanford name entity recognizer. For alias recognition, as I said, they use a string kernel, and for clustering, a non-algorithm, and there are lots of clustering algorithms. This one is non-parametric, so it means you don't have to determine. You really can discover the subgroups without saying how many subgroups. Okay, so this is the first type of visualization. If you have questions, feel free, your comments. No? Good one? Okay. Named entity recognition, so there will be a lot of talks afterwards on name entity recognition, so I won't stay very long with this. So there's Ludovic's work on one question with, there are two main questions with name entity. When you use name entity recognition for a given application is, what do you consider as mentions? So what, you know, what part of the text are named entities? And what are the types that you want to be looking for? Ludovic will talk about it, but as I mentioned, one issue often is that for technical reasons, I guess, a lot of name entity recognition algorithms don't consider embedded name entities. And here we see, so these are examples of name entities, of embedded name entities, where you see that if I take the last example, because it's in French and I don't speak Italian, or whatever that was, I don't ask, I don't know. Anyway, so the last example, you see Aragon is a place, is the name of a place, so this is a location name. Région d'Aragon, region of Aragon, is also a location, it's different from Aragon. And then Territoire aride au sud de la région d'Aragon, so it's south of the region of Aragon, is yet another location. So if you need information about these three types of locations, then you have to consider embedded name entities. So that's an important technical point that many often name entity recognition does not handle embedded ones. But and then the other question is, what are the types you want to look at? What are the types that are relevant for your application? And here I took an example from the Czech name entity corpus 2.0. Which is a name, so it's a similar project to yours. They are working on Czech and German corpora from old Czech and old German, and they want to basically explore it for historical purposes, so they have the same problematics occurring. And so they had to redefine, they basically, again, don't use current name entity recognition tools because they don't work on their corpora. And the way they do it is they do machine learning, so they have to annotate the corpus first. And before annotating, you have to decide. So they decided that these were the types that were really relevant for them. And you can see there are sort of main types and then subtypes. And of course, the more subtypes you have, the more complex the annotation is, and the more time it's going to take to annotate. Okay, so the second type is a location-based visualization. I won't say very much about it. So this was the example in the papers we had to read. And here what I saw is, okay, you associate, you first, from the text, okay, you have the issue of how to map the text fragment, text mentions, to specific locations. So this is geotagging. But then once you have this, and then you can identify the parts of the map that are relevant to you, that are mentioned in your text. But then you also want to associate these places with information, maybe. And I had the answer this morning. So most of this additional information was actually relying on a long-term, very manual annotation process. But you could imagine to at least try to do some, to extract some of this information automatically. But that's a completely different type of visualization. So now the visualization is really location on a map, and then you can associate information with these locations. And here, so the main issue, one main issue is what we call toponym resolution, so that's different from name entity recognition in the sense that it's not enough to identify name entities in your text and to give them a type. You have to, what we call, ground them or anchor them in reality, so you are here, you have to relate whatever location name you found in your text to a specific location in the world, right? So this is what's called toponym resolution as opposed to recognition. So that's a very different, usually you have to do recognition before you do resolution, but recognition definitely does not include resolution. So it's a different step. So this is what I'm saying here, recognizing versus resolving, and of course it might be true also for named entities. You might want to relate them to specific entities in the knowledge base or in the gazetteer. So here I give you some examples. So if you have Hamilton is in the North Island, recognizing the named entities would say, okay, I'm focusing on Hamilton, maybe North Island might be another one. So recognizing would just be saying Hamilton is a named entity in high type location. Alias recognition we saw before is just recognizing different version of the same name, but there is no, you're not anchoring those names to a specific entity. Other things you might want to do is detecting co-referring mentions. So if you have a text like I just showed here, Hamilton is in the North Island, it has a nice beach, weather is a big thing in that city, you might want to detect the fact that Hamilton, it, and that city are talking about the same entity. So this is a co-reference resolution problem, which is yet another problem for which we have tools again, but again not adapted to early modern French. And finally, there's cross-document co-referring mentions, which is identifying mentions of names across documents that refers to the same person. It's a bit like the alias recognition problem. But yeah, I mean, in fact, it is the same, but you can do it in different ways. So this is just recognizing is really, detecting mentions in the text, but not grounding them in reality. And resolving is really about grounding these mentions to an entity, a specific entity, which can be either in a knowledge base, or in the case of a map, it's a coordinate in the space. So in this case, for example, entity link. So for entities, it has been called entity linking in the semantic web community. It means given a mention in the text, linking it to an entity in the knowledge base, often the Wikipedia knowledge base or the DBpedia knowledge base. So in Wikipedia, for example, we would find that there's different types of different Hamilton entities, and then the role of entity linking in this case would be to say, okay, Hamilton, to detect that it's a location, an entity of type location, but then also to say that this mention is referring to Hamilton in New Zealand. And you can see here that the text is actually important for detecting this kind of information, because you might think North Island of what, and then you might find that North Island is in New Zealand. So cross-document resolution is another way it's a slightly different problem. Well, I mean, here I gave another example, but so the idea is if you have several documents, you can have the same names that refers to different entities. And again, so one way to identify those entities would be to link them not to an entity in the knowledge base, but to a collection, a subset of the document. So to say that, the first occurrences of John Smith is talking about CEO of General Motors, and then one way to resolve it would be to group together all the documents that talks about this specific instance of John Smith. So just a few words about why this is a hard problem. I think I more or less already said it, but the thing is, the same entity can have different names. So this was a Fidel Castro example. Location names or names in general often change over time, so particularly in your setup. So you will have, St. Petersburg and Leningrad are the same city, but they have very different names depending on the time of the document you're looking at. Then the same entity name. Same entity can have different names, but you can have a same entity name that can be used for different entities. So this was a John Smith example. So these are problems on the linguistic side, but you also have problems from the tools and resources side, which is a propagation. So as I said, when you are linking or grounding your entities, first you first have to recognize the entities in the text. So you first do name entity resolution, then you do linking or resolution. So if you have errors in the name entity recognition tool, this will propagate. I mean, your linking will be affected. Domain adaptation, David will talk about it after me. Most tools are trained on contemporary language, and they don't work very well on earlier version of the same language. And if you do entity linking, then you want to link your entity to a knowledge base of the gazetteer, but it might not contain the entity that your text is talking about. There was also a paper, I think, the dissonance I don't know, I'm a bit lost in the names, but so the idea is that if you have a gazetteer from now, then some entities that occurred 2 centuries ago might not be there. So, okay, so this was for toponym resolution, and more generally the distinction between detecting and resolving. So the last type of visualization I wanted to mention was what's been called event-based visualization. So this social network visualization where the nodes of the graph are entities and the relations are relations between the entities. It's based on this paper from the German people, I think I mentioned it, yes, this Blessing et al. Paper, so from 2017. What they do here, the main tool they use is name entity recognition, so there's no linking here, and text segmentation. And the idea is that entities that co-occur within a segment are grouped within the network. So basically, they identify relation between entities by looking at a certain span of text in which the entities occur. But one important point about this paper is they really stress the importance of having a domain expert interacting with the tool as you are developing your exploration of the data. So they prone an interactive, semi-automatic, expert-driven data analysis, with the main reason being, one main reason is that automatic tools are imperfect and the results can lead to highly skewed impression of the relative importance of, in their case, characters of text. So, if your name entity recognition is not working very well, does not recognize aliases very well, it might be that, I was thinking of it when you talked about it this morning, because you had, you had the locations and then you pin them by frequency, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then your map would show you the locations that are often referred to, right? But if the name entity is not working very well, if you don't handle aliases, and so it might be, and I think they had an example in the paper, that suddenly an entity becomes very important because it's well recognized, whereas another entity which is actually very important does not occur because the tool is not working very well to detect the aliases that refer to.
I think they were using Harry Potter, so Voldemort would be.
They have different application. In the example, they have individualization.
Yeah, Voldemort never gets named, but he's always brought up.
Right, exactly. That's a good point. So it's really important to check what's going on as you develop, and I will show in the next workflow how they do this. And also to interact with an expert to help mitigate these issues and. Improve the tools that you're using. And the claim that the workflows that they propose is generic in the sense that they applied it to different domains. So they applied it to narrative, modern, and medieval texts, to philosophical texts with the goal of establishing relations between philosophical networks, and to parliamentary debates with the goal of connecting political parties to political issues. So very different applications. So how does it work? They segment the text. As I said, they need to have a window in which to look at to determine the space in which they would be looking for relation between entity. They do name entity linking. And then they create a network of entities that co-occur within a segment. And then they manually explore it. So if you look at it in more detail, it goes automatic pre-processing of the text is a they segment the text into sentences, words, and they also have post-tagging, other speech tagging, which they need for their machine learning tools. Once they've done the pre-processing, they do a name entity recognition. So, and this is where there is sort of this interaction loop, I think. So they do a manual annotation of name entities, then they train their system. And then they have an automatic evaluation using post-validation. But then they have an expert looking at the results, and also the automatic evaluation tells you how good the system is on this data, And then if they, yeah, what they in the paper what they have is the automatic evaluation tells them that the recall is not very strong, so it means that many mentions are not actually detected by the system. So then they can see that from the automatic metrics. So they can, you know, you have this recall and precision metrics that tells you, you know, how well your system is doing at detecting, you know, in a specific, on a specific evaluation corpus, how well it does at detecting what you're looking for. So depending on the results you get, you can either, you know, improve the number of ads and number, refine your annotation guideline to improve precision, or improve, make sure that you